Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Winnipeg Free Press, Calgary Herald, Montreal Gazette, Globe and Mail. Jeff Blair has written for all four. And if you can survive the world of newspapers, you can survive anything. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You used to call me on my... You used to. Yeah.
You know, it was toward the end of his scrum on Thursday that Dwayne Casey dropped a little bit of a warning. Not just to his players, but I think to all of us. I don't know if it'll work. But it was the truth. Casey's point essentially was that the Raptors can't go into tonight's sixth game against the Pacers worrying about what happened in last year's playoffs or the year before. Or 20 years before that, that, you know, basically all they can worry about is what's in front of them. And without saying it, I think he's also saying what might await in Game 7. You know, this is true, of course. And Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan can't undo last year's no-show against the Wizards. They can't undo what happened the year before against the Nets. Can't undo Hedo Turkoglu and Chris Bosh leaving and Andrea Bargnani and Rafael Rujo or any of that stuff. Nope. The Raptors' only concern should be Paul George and getting their own games in order. That's enough for these guys. It should be enough for us.
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Join the conversation with Jeff on Twitter using the hashtag Blair Show or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's Jeff Blair.
There's always lessons. There's lessons I learned this morning. There's lessons, and I'm not trying to be a smart aleck, but again, somehow, some way, we have to flush what happened 2 years ago or 20 years ago to this franchise. What's the most important thing is now, the sense of urgency of now, not 2 years ago, not think about what happened and those ghosts and demons or whatever. We've got to do that. That's the most important thing right now.
I mean, I don't think anybody in this series has spoken truer words than Dwayne Casey. It is the Jeff Blair Show. Stephen Brundle will join us in a few minutes. John Paul Morosi, the national baseball writer for Fox Sports, will be along. Baseball caught another player in its 80-game drug suspension trap, D. Gordon. And I'm hoping. I mean, I feel bad for D. Gordon. But it still amazes me that people always express surprise that guys who failed drug tests aren't all 6'3", 430-pound sluggers. Go take a look at D. Gordon. If D. Gordon can fail a drug test, then that ought to put to rest the stupid yet still present notion that you can tell whether or not a guy's used PEDs by looking at him. John Paul Morosi will join us to talk about that. Saturday, of course, is the night Leafs fans have been waiting for all year. The NHL draft lottery, which we will have on Sportsnet. Jeff Merrick will join us to discuss that. And Joel Corey is an NFL writer for CBS Sports and the National Football Post, also a former agent. He'll be along to discuss what happened in the NFL draft last night. Now, you know how I feel about the NFL. A bad game run by bad people. But what happened to Laremy Tunsil last night in the NFL, it's just everything that is dumb about the NFL, everything that drives those of us who don't worship at the feet of the NFL nuts, wrapped up in what happened to Laremy Tunsil. We'll talk to Joel Corey about that. Rob Harris from the Associated Press will join us from overseas. Leicester City getting ready to clinch the Premiership title in England. Biggest sports story of my lifetime, I think. Certainly biggest surprise of my lifetime. Nothing has happened in sports that would surprise me more than this. We'll talk to Rob Harris about that. And then, of course, it's Baseball Central. But before we deal with those matters, the Raptors play the Indiana Pacers tonight. Tim and Sid, by the way, will be broadcasting live from Jurassic Park from 5 to 7 p.m. tonight on Sportsnet Ontario. Raptors can wrap this series up. They're leading the Pacers 3-2 after that tremendous comeback in Game 5. Alvin Williams is our Raptors analyst in Sportsnet, and Alvin Williams joins us first out of the gate in the Jeff Blair Show. Good morning, Alvin.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Now, that comeback in Game 5 was stirring. There's no doubt about that. But I think most people would assume that if the Raptors don't get off to a solid start tonight, the screws are going to start to tighten slowly. What's the key, Alvin? What is the key in your mind to taking control of this game early?
Well, coming out with the energy and coming out with the aggressiveness and just that tenacious defense has always been talked about, but they have to come out with that. They have to come out with that first. And then at the course of the game, still have to have that certain level of patience, a certain level of trust with your teammates, and just playing smart basketball. So it's a bunch of elements, but initially they have to come out with the energy, controlled energy, and also a smart way of playing.
You know, DeMar DeRozan's game has been under the spotlight in this series, Alvin, an awful lot, but so has Kyle Lowry's. Now, Kyle's shooting hasn't been very good, and I want to ask you, do you think this is his elbow injury? And if it is that, can the Raptors go very far this postseason, you know, without having Kyle Lowry shooting as well as he normally does? Can he somehow tailor his game, or can they somehow restructure their game around him to account for that, maybe that fall off in shooting?
I definitely think the Raptors can go farther or just as far without Kyle shooting as well, just because Kyle has the ability to affect the game in many other ways. Right now, I don't think it's the elbow that's bothering him. I just think right now Indiana's doing a great job defensively. And, you know, he's just not in a great rhythm. And once he gets back into that rhythm and maybe not facing so many people guarding him or the scheme that he's going against, he's a different type of player because he does all the different things as far as rebounding, you know, assists defensively, the energy. So he definitely can make a still imprint on a game without actually scoring.
You know, Alvin, I think we can all agree that DeMar DeRozan really stepped up in Game 5. How have you viewed his series so far?
It's been a struggle for him offensively, but more so I would like to see DeMar do more. Like we just talked about Kyle, I would like to see DeMar do those things also, more than 4 or 5 rebounds. I think he's a guy that can go out there and get 6 or 7 big rebounds, a couple offensive rebounds, and still become a facilitator. He made a big-time play at the end of the game on Game 5 when he found Corey Joseph in the lane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, when he's in the lane and found Corey Joseph for a 3. So with DeMar doing making plays like that, as well as being on that defensive end and being tenacious on that defensive end, that can help him out a lot.
Is there a reason that it has been easier for Kyle Lowry to maybe adapt, if you want to call it that, than DeMar has been able to adapt so far? Is there something about their game, Alvin, something about the position they play? I'm thinking maybe it's more the position they play, right? That maybe if you're a point guard, it's a little easier to kind of adapt your game to according to what's working for you. Is that too simplistic?
Well, in some cases, but Kyle just has a different demeanor. Like his approach to basketball is a little different than DeMar's. Like since Kyle was a little boy playing in Philly and then going to Villanova, and like he's always been that guy that did everything else. That's what made Kyle so special. And you know, Kyle just started becoming a great offensive guy, you know. But Kyle always was the guy that was diving on the floor and, you know, just bullying people around, just being that pest. So it's not hard for Kyle to adjust and refocus his game and doing back what he's great at naturally. You know, you put Kyle in the playground. I've seen him in playgrounds and pickup games. He plays the exact same way. So it's something that's just in his DNA where, you know, he has that ability. So they're just two different two different types of players, and that's what it, I think, comes down to.
In conversation with Alvin Williams on the Jeff Blair Show, do you think maybe, Alvin, that Dwayne Casey found something out in Game 5 with the success he had with Bismack Biyombo, you know, Norm Powell, Corey Joseph, Kyle Lowry, and then kind of flipping DeMar and Terrence in that final spot? I guess that's basically the smallest possible group Dwayne Casey could put out on the court. Do you think maybe he found something out in Game 5, and might we see, Alvin, if the game necessitates it, might we see Dwayne Casey go to that smaller lineup a little earlier in the game?
Yeah, possibly. And I think more so of finding it out, I think he just trusted and he just understood what it was going to take. I think Coach Casey saw the direction of the game. He felt the energy of the game from his team. And he put a lineup in there that really started producing on the defensive end. Offensively, I don't think he was very concerned. I think just from the defensive end and the energy standpoint, he had the small lineup out there with Bismack Biyombo protecting the basket. So with that success that he had, I think going into a game six, or if it has to go to a game seven, he won't be afraid to necessarily go into that mode if he has to go very small, because at the end he will get more energy. He'll get more, you know, he'll get more easier opportunities off a defensive end for the offensive transition. So I think he's not afraid to go that route, but he would definitely like to start with the more traditional lineup that he's used to.
Paul George has said that he wants to play 48 minutes tonight. A reflection, I guess, of some of the concern about how Frank Vogel has used him early in the fourth quarter in a couple of games. How do you view that, Alvin? I mean, as a guy who played regularly, what goes through your mind when you see a coach leaving a guy like Paul George on the bench to start the fourth quarter? And we all understand it's a long season, and we got to remember what Paul George came back from. And it's entirely possible that the coach, you know, the coach knows more about the player than anybody other than the player, certainly more than members of the media. But was it a little surprising to you to see Paul George spend that much time on the bench? I mean, it was clear to everybody what was happening. And it was clear to everybody, I think, that the only answer was to get Paul George back out there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, as a coach, you have your different lineups, you have your different, you know, substitution patterns, and that's what it goes on. Every player wants to play the whole game, but when you're in a coaching position, you have to make sure everybody's in rhythm. You have to get the most out of everybody as much as possible. But with that being said, you know, you have to realize how the game is going, and it may be a perfect time to get Paul George back in. I think Coach Scott was comfortable enough with what he felt Paul George could do when he got back in the game. But it was too late because the Raptors were already on a run and it just didn't shift. But with that being said, if Paul George wants to play 48 minutes in a game like tonight, he's going to play how many minutes ever he wants, because, you know, they definitely need him. And he does so many things out there on the court, defensively, you know, offensively. So that's going to be a decision Frank Vogel's going to have to make. But I think he's going to go with the 48-minute Paul George.
Alvin, do you think that maybe we in the league in general forgot how good Paul George was before that injury, and that we're being reminded of that now?
Yeah, it's always that society. What have you done for me lately? Mm. You know, just going into it, you can't. Paul George is one of the top players in the NBA before the injury. You know, it was just a couple years ago he was going head to head with LeBron James when LeBron James was in Miami. So he was always an elite defender. And when people are, you know, being hard on DeMar, he's going against one of the best defenders and one of the best defensive teams in the NBA right now. So it's no slight to anyone, because Paul George is a great, great player. And if we forgot, he's reminding us right now.
What is it about his game defensively that makes him so difficult? I mean, obviously his length. I look at him, and when you watch him guard somebody, Alvin, and I can't even imagine being in a court and seeing this, but when you watch him guard somebody, it's like all you see are limbs. You know, you see limbs in front of you, and it's like the sun is blocked out. Well, I know they're indoors, but the lights are blocked out. What is it about him as a defender that makes him so tough?
Honestly, it's his mentality. He wants to be a good defender, and any defender, any good defender you see in any sport or any league or anybody you see, they take that as a serious job, and he does that. It's just so rare that you see someone as talented as him offensively and so smooth offensively that he's that good in defense. But yes, he has the attributes as far as the length, the size, the height. But all it comes down to is his mindset and his heart. And he's determined not to let DeMar DeRozan have any free opportunities, any good looks. And he takes it personally. And that's what it boils down to. He's a great defender because of his mindset and his heart.
I'm going to put you in the spot here. What happens tonight? And I'll actually ask you a little differently. The first 5 minutes of the game, what do we need to see from the Raptors, or what do you need to see from the Raptors that suggest to you they're going to be okay? And what do you need to see from the Pacers that suggest to you that they may have the game?
You said for the Raptors, you need to see the outset of game three. I don't know if you remember how it came out in game three. It came out so physical, so aggressive on the defensive end. And then on the offensive end, they were very decisive. You know, they played together. They played hard. You know, DeMar came out, made a few shots. But on the defensive end, they got to make them feel bodies. They got to have Paul George, you know, make him be a physical and make him use, if he want to play 48 minutes, it's going to make it feel like he has played for two straight days. So this got to be really physical. And the first 5 minutes can set that tone. And Indiana, they're doing a very good job of passing the ball, not alone on the defensive end, but on the offensive end, they're making extra passes. They're finding players. So they're doing a great job being patient and sharing the ball. But defensively, they're doing a great job. So it's all going to be predicated on how Toronto comes out and how long they can stay with that focus and how smart they can play throughout the game.
It should be a lot of fun tonight, Alvin. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me.
It's Alvin Williams, our Raptors analyst on Sportsnet. Want to remind you, by the way, that we here at Sportsnet 590 The Fan, we're going to send you to a basketball game. And you're asking, Jeff, how can you say you're going to send us to a basketball game? You don't know if the Raptors are going to win. Well, here's what you're going to do. You're going to listen tomorrow. If the Raptors win tonight, we're going to start a contest that's going to send you and a friend on the road to see the Raptors, whether it's Miami or Charlotte. If the Raptors lose tonight, then you know what? We're going to send you to Game 7 on Sunday. So you can't lose either way. Raptors win. We're going to start a contest. It's going to send you and a friend to Miami or Charlotte, whoever the Raptors meet in the next round. Raptors lose. We're going to send you to Game 7 at the ACC. How great would that be? How great would that be? So what you got to do tomorrow is you got to listen to Sportsnet 590 The Fan tomorrow. You're going to listen anyhow because we've got the Jays playing. We've got the draft lottery, all that good stuff. But you got to listen to Sportsnet 590 The Fan tomorrow. And you can go to Sportsnet. What is it? Sportsnet590.ca for details. Sportsnet.ca/590 for details. So there you go. We're going to send you to a game. All right? It's either going to be a game in the next series or it's going to be Game 7, the deciding game of this series. So there you go. John Paul Morosi is a national baseball writer for MLB Network. John Paul Morosi will join Stephen Brunt and myself when the Jeff Blair Show continues on the home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show, joined now by Stephen Brunt, fresh from Tavistock.
Yeah, we missed you there last night.
Yeah, well, you could probably tell the extra night seems to have worked a little bit.
Yeah, you're close. 78% normal, I think now. But
no, the upper body injury, I'd say it's about 85%.
But it was I brought you a present, though.
You did. You brought me a big. Big ass sausage.
Summer sausage and a hunk of cheese from Tavistock.
Yeah.
That was where our parting gifts last night, which was great. What a cool thing, though. I got a So we're it's Pitch Talks, which I hope people who are listening to this know about it. It's a lot of fun. But Pitch Talks, Tavistock, some guys approached Kevin Kennedy, mm-hmm. who runs Pitch Talks, and said, "What would it take to get your show to Tavistock?" And he said, "Well,
beer.
Yeah, if you sell some tickets, and there's 2,500 people in Tavistock,
mm-hmm.
so, which is about 20 minutes north of Woodstock. And by the way, to our engineers here, we need to boost our signal a little bit down there. Some people are having a little trouble with it. Depends on which side of Tavistock you're in. But so, 20 minutes north of Woodstock, 2,500 people. There were over 200 people there last night.
Wow.
So, pretty close to 10% of the local population was in the hall there last night. And predictably, a great bunch of folks, crazy baseball fans. We talked Jays, we talked Colabello, we talked, Canadian baseball, the national team, like all kinds of stuff. And, it was an absolute delight. So I think we may go back, right? I think there's a sense that we could do this again.
No, I will definitely be on. I'll definitely be on board for that.
So thanks to our pals down in Tavistock.
Yeah,
for hosting us. Yeah,
it sounds like everybody had a great time. Just some of the reaction on Twitter as well. So kudos to those of you, and thanks to those of you who came out in Tavistock. I think John Paul Morosi's done about 15 Pitch Talks, hasn't he?
I think so. We should do Pitch Talks Ann Arbor, so you could do it right down the street.
Go.
I'd go to that. I like Ann Arbor.
We should. I have not yet made my Pitch Talks debut, guys, but I'm hoping that I get up to Toronto very soon and can make that happen, because I've heard outstanding things about it consistently every time you guys have done that. So great job by the folks there that organized the Pitch Talks.
You haven't broken your Pitch Talk cherry yet, in other words.
I'll put in a good word for you, JP, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate it, guys.
We could do it at Morosi's house. I mean, it's big enough. You've got, what, 7.5 acres?
Oh, yeah, right. Well, listen,
do a barbecue.
Well, no, the modest Morosi residents know that there is no palatial environment here. Remember, I have that home camera, but it's in a very sort of narrow room in the basement. That's how I try to stay on the air, is via my basement cam. There you go.
Okay, all right. Radio Morosi, TV Morosi, as you call it. We will have Jays and Rays baseball tonight. Aaron Sanchez on the mound for the Jays, Drew Smyly for the Rays. First pitch at 7 on Sportsnet 590. The Fan at Sportsnet Ontario. Blue Jays Central with Campbell and Zahn is at 6:30. And then you can call into the Blue Jays Talk and Vent with Mike Wilner right after the final out on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Before we talk about the Blue Jays, got to talk about D. Gordon, the Miami Marlins leadoff hitter, getting suspended for 80 games last night for testing for a couple of substances. And surprise, surprise, Johnny's got no idea how they got in, has no idea how they got into his system. It's funny because I was looking at this and, the first thing that came to mind is we all know how people automatically assume that the only people who flunk steroid tests or PED tests are big, bulky sluggers. And, D. Gordon's certainly not a big, bulky slugger. I mean, we know that's not a fact anyhow. But the other thing is, this is 3 positive tests reported in the span of, 12 days?
Right.
People are starting to ask questions about that. Now, it's still, I think, as I saw on Twitter today, it's still about, what we're seeing is that 1% of the players so far have failed drug tests. But is this, do you think the fact that we're seeing this early spate of drug tests is going to make this perhaps become more of a talking point during negotiations on a new CBA?
I do. And I think, Jeff, that's certainly a part of the overall conversation here. I mean, one thing you can deduce from this is, again, it's not, to your point, just one type of player who is testing positive right now. It's sort of the spectrum. And you look at it, I mean, D. Gordon, you would have said, if you would have asked me yesterday, he would have probably been on my top 10 list of the people I would have least suspected would ever test positive for PEDs. And it's not just the fact that he's a speedster and that type of a sort of a speed player, not at all a slugger, but I mean, one of the greatest people you'd ever meet in the game, nicest guy, all these things. So you look at it, and Jeff, it just further illustrates how we don't know. We don't know necessarily how intentional or unintentional some of these violations are, but the reality is they're still happening. baseball at this point in time, here we are in 2016, more than a decade after the penalties have started for PEDs, the PEDs are still an issue in this sport. Now, are they as much of an issue as they were 11 years ago? No, but they're still a problem. And I think the question now comes, how much more aggressively does baseball need to be in terms of the testing? Or is the evidence that we're having now of positive tests and suspensions, as in the case of Gordon and Colabello, tell us that baseball's program is doing its job? I mean, the one thing, though, I would say, you go back to the beginning of the season and Taylor Teagarden's suspension, the non-analytical positive, if you will, where that was based on the information gleaned through the Al Jazeera America report, Taylor Teagarden never flunked a test. So I do think on a certain level it's almost true that it is both ways. Number one, the policy is good enough that it's still catching people, but also there are people that are falling through the cracks and understand how to beat the tests and are not getting testing positive, even though they are clearly using PEDs, as in the case of Teagarden. So I do think, guys, there is going to be a movement by MLB to try to continue to modernize and adapt the program to try to stay ahead of the people that are trying to beat it. But the reality is the scientists and the chemists and the people that are creating these steroid cocktails, if you will, I think the evidence to us, guys, suggests that they are still a step ahead of the testers, and that's probably going to continue to be the case even in the new CBA, whatever changes are made in the interim.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because you know, some of the stuff that's turned up, or at least the markers for it, some of it has been not kind of bulko, clear and cream stuff they didn't know anything about, you know, but it's been kind of old school,
right.
Which is odd. But, I guess what I'm wondering is, I think when you catch people, that tells you the system is working. You're not going to catch everyone, just like you're not going to catch everyone in any kind of an enforcement thing. But if you're catching people, then something's working. I wonder if they've tweaked something, though, JP, because you know they wouldn't advertise that if somehow they tweaked the testing regimen a little bit. Not to the point where it would have to change what was negotiated with the players. But I always assume if somebody gets caught for something, it's probably not the first time they did it. It's the first time they got caught. You know, that they don't. You probably don't get caught the first time you use a supplement with something in it. You pass a bunch of tests, and then you feel kind of relax about it. And I wonder if some guys were. If there was a certain relaxation about certain kinds of things that are floating around, and that maybe an adjustment has taken place, and some guys who were quite confident doing what they were doing are suddenly extraordinarily shocked that they're getting caught.
Right. No, that's a very good point, Stephen. And to your point about the substances, I mean, that list is on the wall in every clubhouse. What they test for, I mean, that is known to all players. And also, in D. Gordon's statement, I think it's important to note, he talked about how he unknowingly took this substance, that he, quote, ingested something that contained prohibited substances, end quote. He also, though, did say at the end of the statement that, quote, I made a mistake and I accept the consequences. So whether it was a knowing mistake or an unknowing mistake, as D. Gordon said, he acknowledges it was a mistake. And I think that for any player, Stephen, when you look at these supplements, listen, there is a stamp on these things. It says NSF approved. And if there's a stamp on it, that basically says that it's been tested by an independent body that is validated and sort of endorsed by Major League Baseball's testing program, that this is okay to take. NSF approved. It's a seal. You can see it on anything you buy it at a GNC or a supplement store. It's on there. And if the seal is on there, it's okay to take. If the seal is not on there, it's not okay to take. And I think whether it's sort of a purposeful, I am taking steroids mentality, or a case of negligence of not making sure that the NSF sticker's on there, to me, they're all violations. And I think D. Gordon's statement acknowledges that in a way that probably we didn't really hear from Colabello in the wake of his positive test. D. Gordon is basically saying, I made a mistake of maybe not being as cognizant as I should have been about the legality of what I was taking, but still, it's a mistake. It's still a violation of the program. D. Gordon accepted that, and I give him credit for that. But I think, Stephen, it's all now in the way that we're viewing things. Is it a mistake of sort of knowingly taking steroids or of not being appropriately vigilant about what you're taking? To me, as much as we ethically want to draw a distinction there, for the purposes of the program,
there's no
a violation is a violation.
Yeah, no, it's cut and dried. You know, it really, and that's, yeah, that's not, and you that's the way you have to do it, right? You can't, you know, if they start kind of debating about intent and awareness, it's a rabbit hole, right? You can't go down that rabbit hole. They have to do it this way. And you know, Colabello, to his credit, hasn't disputed the test. You know,
right.
He's not disputing that they found. You know, he is expressing kind of bafflement that it's there. But, you know, they do have an appeal process. The appeals have played out. But no one's really attacking the system per se. You know, there's people expressing surprise. But no one's – because, you know, again, it's the system the players collectively bargain.
Right.
They had a stake in this. And it's as fair – and you get a powerful union there. I think it's as fair as any system in sport.
I agree, Stephen, and that's a very good point you make about the fact that the players, we're not hearing right now players in mass getting up and saying, hey, the system is broken, the system is flawed, even those that have been caught, to your point. So I think that, to me, is encouraging from the standpoint of, if anything, the system is going to get tougher, better under the new CBA and not more restrictive, where the players are going to say, no, we have to have fewer tests, or they can't be random, or we can't do the blood test for HGH in spring training, and the additional random ones during the course of the year. So if the players thought the system was unfair, we would be hearing loudly from Tony Clark and others at the union saying, hey, listen, this is wrong. Our players' rights are not being protected. We, in fact, are hearing quite the opposite. Mm. And Ken Rosenthal wrote recently, Stephen, about how there are some players that want potentially even a lifetime ban for a first offense if it's
yep.
proven that there was knowing steroid use of sort of an intentional origin. So I think, if anything, the players are becoming more vigilant about it and are, in fact, supportive of maybe increased testing. I do think baseball is correct, Stephen. When they say this is the toughest program in North American professional sports, I agree with that. I think it is. Is it perfect? Is it catching everyone? No. And I think that's where I think the union, at least the more powerful, I think the veteran players that have a voice here, I think they're actually closer on their philosophical beliefs about this to where MLB is than maybe certainly they were a decade ago. I really think that a lot of people are on the same side of this issue in terms of trying to make the toughest program they can. The one thing I would say is the notion of the blood test and that aspect of it. If you get into the area of, and this is a reasonable concern, I believe, from the player standpoint, of having to sort of give a blood sample a couple hours before a game starts or right after when you're either dehydrated or trying to get ready to play a major league game, I mean, that maybe is a bit of a concern I'm sensitive to on the player standpoint from a standpoint of just making sure they're able to perform. But I think everything else in terms of the random urine tests, I think the players are very supportive of maybe even more frequent testing to make sure that that these new substances that are being created by the chemists out there are in fact showing up in the tests when they occur.
You know, John, the other thing too that I find really interesting, and this gets to your point, Justin Verlander tweeted out this morning, I can't use the word that he used, but, you know, basically it was enough of this PED blank, and you really get the sense that in addition to harsher penalties, what you may start hearing more and more is talk of some sort of mechanism that allows teams to perhaps have a clawback on a player's contract. In other words, D. Gordon signed a 5-year, $50 million contract. D. Gordon fails a drug test. Maybe, I don't know if you void the contract because of that, but there's talk that some teams would like to see some sort of mechanism that it would at least allow them to reopen the contract and maybe, you know, take a year off it or something like that, or get the signing bonus back. I mean, that seems to me to be where this is ultimately going.
It's a great, great point. And I think, Jeff, that's something that certainly the teams would welcome. And indeed, maybe several players would believe that's a fair thing to do. My thought on it is that the notion of the guaranteed contract, that has been so sacrosanct mm-hmm. for the players' union for so long that I don't see Tony Clark sort of unilaterally giving that up, unless he's getting something back that is huge in return. I mean, I think in bargaining, everything obviously is on the table, and I guess you could imagine that being something that maybe the union would be willing to entertain. But boy, Jeff, I think they'd have to get something back that's huge. That really is exactly what they wanted for them to consider doing it. I wouldn't say that it's totally out of the realm of possibility that that would happen as you described it. But I think the union would have to get back something that is so huge that the notion of breaking that covenant of the guaranteed contract, which from an ironclad standpoint has been one of the just the sort of essential tenets of this entire union for going back decades, the guaranteed contract. I think we can all agree that it would be a fair and just thing to do. But I think the union has been so protective of that as just part of its ethos that I think it would be very hard for Tony Clark to come in his very first negotiation, by the way,
right,
as executive director of the MLBPA, to come up and say, you know what, yes, in my first ever negotiation, I'm willing to give up the guaranteed contract, for even though it's a subset of guys that we would agree is certainly deserving of having that guaranteed contract stripped away from them. I just think even if it's under that pretense, that it would be very, very hard, Jeff, I believe, for Tony Clark to give that up, even for a cheater.
Well, the players,
very first negotiation,
you may view it as a thin edge of the wedge, too. If you start there, then what if a guy gets injured in a car accident or something like that, in the offseason?
Exactly right.
By the way, should mention that D. Gordon tested positive for exogenous testosterone and clostebol, so two substances.
Okay, let's go ahead. Yeah, let's talk a bit of Blue Jays while we got you here, JP. We had Mark Shapiro on yesterday, right? Was it yesterday? And we talked to him about a variety of topics, including the drug topic. But the Toronto Blue Jays right now, have off to a scuffling start, and aside from the faltering offense, the number one issue would be they have a tough time bridging from what's been a pretty good starting staff to a very good closer in Roberto Osuna, right? That's cost them, five games, six games. It's the difference between a record which you'd be pretty comfortable with right now and one that's set off a little bit of panic. If we're talking to Mark about how do you fix that if Brett Cecil doesn't come around, if Drew Storen doesn't look like Drew Storen. If you had to go outside the organization, because they don't have a lot of organizational options here, JP. If you're doing that on the 1st of May or the middle of May or the 1st of June, given the value of relievers in the baseball economy right now, how would you do that and what would it cost you?
Steven, it's a great question because as we sit here today, I actually just looked this up. The Jays still have in sole possession of first place in a category no one wants to have, which is most losses by your bullpen. They are the bullpen in games decided by the Jays bullpen, 0-7. 0-7 with a 4.03 ERA. So basically, what that tells us is, in this very narrow sample, when the game has been decided by the bullpens late in the game, if it's tied or a lead change late, the Jays have lost every single time. They are 0-7. So that really is alarming. But to your question, at this stage of the season, I remember I've asked this question at different times, and it's come up every time a team struggles in their bullpen early in the season. Can you get a reliever right now? And the answer to that question is almost always the price is exorbitant, and that's just the way that it goes. Now, the one thing that I would say about the Jays that might work in their favor is that the certainly most trades are easiest to make across the league. So you'd acquire a National League player, and the NL, unlike the AL, right now is. And I was talking to Bob Melvin about this in Detroit yesterday. Of course, the manager of the A's. There's not really a team that even you conceive as being out of it or should be out of it at this stage. That basically the American League, there was not a single team that began the season saying, you know what, we are totally out of the mix. We are rebuilding. We are not going to be competitive this year. We are out of the mix. Not a single AL team said that. Whereas in the National League, you have basically two rebuilding teams per division almost when you look at it down the line. So could you see a situation where at some point in time a Jeremy Jeffress in Milwaukee or an A.J. Ramos in Miami, those types of closers are available? Sure, but the cost on them, Stephen, is going to be so high that the Jays, when you listen, of course, to the offseason and Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins talking so much about needing to rebuild the farm system depth. So this is the perfect storm. It's an underperforming bullpen. at a time of year when there are not a lot of relievers available, and if the relievers are available, the price is exorbitant, and the Jays farm system does not have the prospects they had a year ago, and the overall bend philosophically of Shapiro and Atkins is to hold the prospects they still have. So really, the answer to that, and I know Jays fans don't want to hear it, it's going to be almost impossible, given that set of circumstances, for the Jays to upgrade their bullpen in a meaningful way, beyond like a flyer or a waiver claim on a guy that has had struggles elsewhere. You're just not going to get an ace-level eighth-inning guy or a seventh-inning guy at this stage. You're just not. It's just unless you're going to overpay, and Shapiro and Atkins are not the type of people that overpay, especially for relievers, especially in April. So I think it's just a... It's a very, very difficult circumstance, and frankly, I don't know how they're going to get better from the outside, Stephen. At this stage, they're just going to have to find a way to get better from within, and that is not easy to do.
I mean, I think the only way they can do that possibly is to put Aaron Sanchez in the bullpen, which...
That's a whole other...
You know, their best starter right now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
I mean, he's
exactly.
He's basically been their best starter.
Yeah, that's,
has he not?
That's a whole other debate. John, thanks for doing this as always. Have a great weekend.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great weekend. I'm optimistic that my Stanley Cup pick of the Capitals still very much in play, my friends.
We'll talk to Jeff Merrick in the next hour about that. I think it is definitely in play. Take care.
Sounds great, guys. Thank you.
Jean-Paul Morosi, the national baseball writer for MLB Network.
You know, we had Joe Settle on here the other day, and he said we talked about a lot of different stuff, mm-hmm. but you know, and Joe said, you know, who's not a guy who kind of leans towards hyperbole, but just in his Joe Settle way, he said, you know, if Drew Starn and Brett Cecil aren't good, they're in a whole lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And I think that's, again, if we keep boiling this thing down,
yep.
There aren't a lot of options. There are no internal options. They're not going to further pillage whatever prospect capital they have at this stage in the season. And if you can't bridge to your closer, you got big problems.
And you don't have, I mean, you don't really have position guys you'd move without having to pick up money.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to move one of the, you're certainly not going to move Edwin or Jose.
Well, you can't move
for
unless they want
arm.
To move too. They're 10
exactly.
or 5, right? Or 5 and 10.
Exactly.
But,
so.
You know, there's that. Plus, again, the teams that are clear in house and have, you know, in the National League,
mm-hmm.
they don't want those guys. They want want Connor Green.
Yeah.
You want to trade him guys. Or, you know, Rowdy Tellez? Yeah, you probably get something back.
They want young guys. The Stanley Cup playoffs will continue tonight on Sportsnet and Rogers NHL Game Center Live. The Blues and Stars will start their series at 8 p.m. That'll be in the CBC. The Predators and Sharks will start their series at 10:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Jeff Merrick is host of Hockey Central, the NHL and Sportsnet, the CHL and Sportsnet. Merrick versus... He's the host of everything. And Jeff Merrick's going to join us when the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunn continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.